Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
You're listening to the Aramco 2022 F1 Car Reveal Series. The race is on, and Ferrari has joined F1's launch season by revealing the new F175, the car it hopes will allow it to recapture race-winning and perhaps even title-challenging form. But is it good enough, and what is going on with its side pod design? I'm Ed Straw, and joining me to answer those questions and many more is Gary Anderson. Well, Gary, before we get on to the car, you quite enjoyed that launch, didn't you? Nice and simple, straightforward. Car was a star, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought the launch was great. You know, it was fairly simple, easy. It was about the car, with the main players there to sort of introduce it or show it or whatever you like to call it. But excellent. It wasn't all the paraphernalia that we see from some of these other guys. This should be about the car. This is what Formula One is. And, you know, that's what they advertised today was the launch of their new contender for 2022. And that's what we saw, hopefully. We never know quite exactly because there are subtle changes that could happen before the car actually turns a wheel even. But there might be some subtle changes they might need to do before the car actually turns a wheel. But we'll get into that in a bit more detail in a minute.
Yeah, and the car will hit the track on Friday, a 15-kilometre maximum demonstration event. They're doing that at Fiorano. The rules don't allow you to do it at a licensed circuit, which Fiorano is for F1, so they're having to cut and shut the track a little bit, so they're allowed to do that. And then they'll also run on a promotional day, so that's what we normally call a filming day, 100 kilometres maximum, Barcelona the day before the first pre-season test starts. So plenty of mileage for Ferrari there. But Gary, let's get on to the real talking point, the side pods. I must admit, my untrained eye, they don't look quite right. They seem quite unusual. You've coined the term valleys to describe the shape of the top surface profile. So what do you make of this design?
Well, there may be something else going on there that we can't see, but we can only take things on face value. And I'm not an aerodynamist by any means, but I've done a hell of a lot of aerodynamic research into Formula One cars. And what I'm seeing at the minute, it's not just the side pods either, by the way, but what I'm seeing at the minute is a fairly confusing set of circumstances. It might be, the golden bullet or whatever you like to call it. But I don't see why that's the thing to try and understand. There's two or three things that we've tried to do through the years with these cars. And I know this is a ground effect car, but the reality of it is, other than the leading edge of the floor and the diffuser being bigger, the rest of it is bodywork profiling to suit the new regulations. And we've had ground effect on these cars for years, just not as powerful as what the 2022 regulations should give us. So although everything changes, the reality of it is nothing changes. And I can't quite understand what Ferrari have tried to do with the side pod, with the, you know, sort of back of the driver, back of the cockpit, I suppose you might call it, front of the airbox. It's just basically a big square side pod. And obviously they've undercut the top of the side pod to try and pull the airflow down across the top of the side pod. And as you say, into underneath the rear wing or onto the beam wing or something. But then they flick it sort of back up again to get a bit of an exit out of it. So I'm not seeing the philosophy, the design philosophy from the front of the car to the back of the car. I'm not seeing it connect up. And I don't really understand why. Now, maybe, as I say, that this is going to be magic and all the rest of them are rubbish. But if you were to take this car and put beside it the AlphaTauri, let's say, which I think is a neat little tidy package, you have a completely different concept. And yeah, okay, one's going to be better than the other. And the might of Ferrari will probably end up being better than the AlphaTauri, but not from the, you know, from my point of view, not from the initial concept that we're seeing here.
Well, I must admit, my rule of thumb is when you look at something like that, normally even someone like me can get the absolute first principles, normally after someone like you's explained it. But when you've got something like this that seems just to be a bit counterintuitive and not the right way, usually it means two things. Either it's just been got wrong, or it's a stroke of genius. And obviously, there's a lot of very clever people at Ferrari, so they will have been able to look at that and they'll have had the same kind of counterintuitive feeling about it. So they've had a very good reason. That's just the fascinating thing, isn't it? To do something like that, they must at least think they've got a good reason. Whether it all adds up in reality is another question, I guess.
Well, you know, if you start at the back of the car, basically the rear track is 2 meters wide. The outside of the rear wheels is 2 meters wide. The rear tire diameter, I think, is 750 or some 760 or something. So 3/4 of a meter high. And then you've got a fairly powerful rear wing, which gives you an upwash. So if you take a section across the back of the car, the two rear wheels, the upwash of the rear wing, the diffuser, in other words, the whole back of the car, if you take a snapshot of the back of the car and just drew a profile around it, that is the area of the car that's creating the low pressure area behind the car. And you want to fill that hole up at the back of the car as best you can, because the further away from the car the low pressure area gets, the more drag the car generates. But that area across the back of the car is basically what the airflow heading for the front wing sees. It's you pull the airflow around the car. You don't push it around the car, you pull it around the car. And you pull it around the car and you try to increase the speed of it on various surfaces. That's what wings do. That's what the underfloor does. You try and increase the speed, and that speed increase means the air is thinner, goes faster, and creates downforce. But as I say, you can't push it around the car. You have to pull it around the car. So, you know, although these cars start at the front and go at the back, they actually start at the back and go at the front, because that's what you need to do. And the two ends of the car need to talk to each other. And, you know, if I was to take a jigsaw and slice this through at the front of the airbox, they are two completely different cars in a way. You know, they aren't talking to each other, the front and back. And I don't know how you get the performance out of something like that. You know, if you don't allow them to talk to each other and use the airflow at the back of the car to help the airflow at the front of the car and vice versa, and they have to connect up somehow. Now, you know, you take the Aston Martin as let's say, the way out wacky inception of that. It's, you know, with its undercut floor, it's double floor. I mean, Ferrari had that years ago with John Barnard in a double floor car. I think it was John Barnard. It didn't really work as well as it should have done, but for different reasons. You take, you know, the Williams with hardly any side pod whatsoever on it, but it's still got shape in the side pod, but they have a very small side pod a lot further forward. You take the McLaren, it's a fairly middle-of-the-road concept. You know, you take the AlphaTauri, it's a fairly middle-of-the-road concept. But they have got a philosophy from the front of the car to the back of the car, and they've carried that through. And I can't see that in this Ferrari. I'm sorry to say, I really, really wanted this to be something that I could feel was ready to challenge Red Bull and Mercedes at the front. Now, we haven't seen the Red Bull or the Mercedes. They might come out identical to the Ferrari, and then we can all know that they'll race together. But where on the grid will they race together? That's the big question. We all want them racing at the front because they are the teams with the big drivers. The whole philosophy of those three teams are about winning. And we need to get them back, Ferrari back to joining those instead of being ahead of the midfield bunch. We need them. We need them in the middle of the leading bunch. And I don't see that in this car anywhere.
Yeah, the F92A Ferrari was on with the twin floor. I think it was just before Barnard went back. So I think it was a Jean-Claude Miggio and Steve Nichols idea. I think mainly Miggio was the twin floor proponent, and John Barnard, I think, came in the year after. But yeah, it's he had a brief spell at Benetton in between his two Ferrari stints, so he's difficult to keep track of. But it is interesting what you say about that sort of disconnect in the side pod, in that they've got the undercut and then they sort of give up on it. But I guess people will be thinking, well, this is all about the Venturi tunnels for producing downforce. Does what's going on kind of on top of the floor really matter in the same way? Has Ferrari just understood the trade-offs better than anyone else? Could it be something like that?
Yes, obviously it could be very easily. I mean, the underfloor tunnel is for sure the thing that will generate a big percentage of the car's downforce in 2022. The problem is just getting the continuity of flow through the car, because the diffuser itself, the underfloor just won't work as its own thing. Now, if you come forward on the car, the front wing is very heavily inboard loaded. There are some other cars like that, but there are a lot of other cars that aren't quite so heavily inboard loaded. And if you've got an underfloor tunnel leading edge coming up behind that, the wake of that front wing is going to affect it. It's going to affect it dramatically, because when you punch that front wing through the airflow, the airflow comes out the other end of it fairly fed up with life. It's just been beaten to death to create front downforce. And then you're trying to get it into the leading edge of an underfloor with as much energy in it as possible, because the faster that airflow can get underneath the car, then the diffuser can accelerate it again. So you need to make sure that you're getting that flow into the car, into the underfloor of the car, as fast as possible, with as much energy in it as possible, because the diffuser will just expand that flow and will mean that you get more downforce out of the underfloor. So maybe by not having the undercut side pods, if that's true, Aston Martin are definitely down the wrong avenue, as you might call it. But I can't see this in my mind. As I say, I probably wouldn't have gone the Aston Martin route if I was sort of putting together a proposal. I definitely wouldn't have gone the Ferrari route. So if it works, it definitely beats me. And as I say, I think the AlphaTauri come McLaren is a reasonably nice package. But if I was picking one right now, it'd be the AlphaTauri. Maybe not the front wing on it, but basically the AlphaTauri side pod arrangement and packaging that's getting the diffuser, the airspeed across the top of the diffuser sorted out fairly early on, and allowing airflow to come from everywhere, as opposed to really, really dictating where it's going to come from.
Well, as Mattia Binotto said, it's an innovative approach. They've talked about creativity, thinking outside the box. They've certainly done that with the side pods. So they're out there on their own. Let's see how they get on with those when the car gets running.
You're listening to the Aramco 2022 F1 Car Reveal Series. Aramco continuously push the limits of engineering. As the global energy partner of F1, they drive a shared vision to real-world innovation that aims to lower emissions, enhance performance, and drive ongoing human-led progress. Aramco, powered by Howe.
Okay, let's look a little bit more at other areas of the car. Should we move towards the front now? Because the nose, again, captures the eye pointy, and it's not completely separated from the nose. A lot of them, the second element is what's actually mounted to the nose, and then the main plane, as you used to call it, at the bottom is hanging off that. But this is actually integrated to the nose now, isn't it?
Yes, and during the press release, that was the interesting thing that the drivers were sort of saying about not having the front wing hanging on pylons. The regulations say that the front wing needs to attach directly to the nose. What that is, I'm not quite sure how you can sort of take that regulation and implement it, because the teams that have the second element directly attached to the nose and have the forward element hanging on it, is that legal? I suppose, I'm sure they've asked the question, and I'm sure it is. But there might be a little controversy there. But with this one here, obviously they don't have that that slot gap going across their first element to the second element, but they do have that spoon part in the front wing. We've seen that years ago. I mean, you have the big spoon. I think it was on the Honda. They had a big spoon 1 year off the front main plane. But that was at a time whenever the front wing was a bit lower. And at that point in time, that's sort of when the FIA or the Pat Simmons, as it was that time, the overtaking working groups were coming in with the neutral section in the middle of the car so that the flow wasn't disturbed in the middle of the car quite so much. But times move on, so you know you end up with a different package. This obviously the nose section going through it just in sort of front of the rear, in front of the front tires, is a very small cross section. So that's all good stuff. But as I say, the thing about the inboard end of the front wing flaps, they are so heavily loaded that they make the front of the car really very, very difficult to imagine getting good airflow off it. Now it's one of those sort of situations where obviously they work with a certain thing and then you optimize everything downstream because of what you've got, and that's what they've been doing, that's what they've had to do. But I just can't quite see, as I say, that the optimization of the flow at the front of the car to help the leading edge of the sidepod. They do have the front wing to the front wheel, so that there's a bigger gap between the end plates and the front wheel than on most other cars. Now, that's a sort of strange regulation because there's a reference point in the chassis, and the front wing is relative to that, and then the front wheels you can actually move back and forward a bit. So there is a chance that people have got different concepts in that area. This looks like it's got a fairly big gap to the front wheels, which sort of means that the front wing is, in effect, further forward. But, you know, you can't have more than 3.6 metres wheelbase. So you've got to still comply with that. So you can't have a long car just because you hang the front wing out of it. You've got this front and rear wheel distance apart, and then you can position the rest of the car within that. So it'll be interesting to see who comes up with the right package as far as that's concerned. It will affect weight distribution, which is a very limited amount of tolerance in it. I think it's 1% overall that you can move the weight distribution from a certain point. There's not much you can do there, but the aerodynamic distribution, you can change that little bit because of where the front wing is. So that's probably the biggest thing that I see that's varying between cars is how they're applying that given regulation. But only time will tell who's got it right. You can't go very far apart because obviously the rules of everything has to tie up somewhere. But as I say, I don't see really someone that excites me at the minute about it.
And suspension, push rod at the front, pull rod at the rear. There have been all sorts of rumours about what Ferrari was or was not doing. And someone said pull rod at the front, but no, very much push rod. And it kind of shows why listening to the rumour mill on how cars might be designed is always risky, partly because sometimes there's designs that are worked on, but don't actually get onto the car because they investigate all sorts of things. So relatively conventional, but anything at the suspension front or rear that catches the eye?
No, relatively conventional. I mean, you can see where the top wishbone forward leg twists through its length, starts off fairly tail down, I suppose, at the inboard end, and then comes up to changes the angle. The tail of it comes up a bit. You're allowed a certain amount of degree change on the wishbones. And again, that's because of the weight coming off the front wing. You're trying to trap that and pull it back down again, ready for the side pods. And obviously, the radiator intakes is the highest point there. So that top part of that front wing wake will be going into the radiator. And then, the next part down, which it all connects together, but the next part down of that wake will be going into the undercut in the side pod, which is very, very abrupt. And as I say, you know, it's very bluff, I suppose you might call it. So they're trying to, sort of really stall that airflow in front of that part of the side pod and force it out the side, which will create some, wake coming out the side of the car, outwash, as it's called. It's a bit like the sort of the barge board, you know, whenever it's sitting there, it turned the airflow around and stuck it out the side of the car quite quickly. But not the same, because obviously the barge board was an individual component sticking up. It had flow both sides of it, whereas this hasn't got flow both sides of it. This has only got flow on the front surface of it. So by pushing that out there, they could probably work the front corner of the floor a bit harder, but there's nothing on the floor itself at the moment that shows that they're trying to work that front corner of the floor any harder. And again, by doing that correctly, you could seal the back of the floor from where it starts to cut back in the coke bottle a bit better. You might get more downforce out of the diffuser. So there's lots of reasons to think that what we've seen could be made work, but on visually, from an initial point of view, I have to sort of stick a question mark on it.
You mentioned that there's sort of the bluff transitions and that kind of thing. And obviously, we have to caveat everything we say with these bits can change. Front wing in particular is a classic one for changing. But I must admit, when I first looked at the car, it looks purposeful. But it also just had that tiny little thing in my mind that reminded me a little of the Ferrari F310, which was the 96 car, which was a John Barnard car. Remember, I tend to think of it as a bit of an armchair with those big cockpit sides, because John Barnard didn't work out what you and Adrian Newey worked out about what you could do with the cockpit sides. Now, it doesn't look like that car, but it looks sort of quite just a little bit chunky in a way. That's just the very unscientific, unmathematical way of looking at it. Do you sort of feel that as well? Is that tying together the things you've been saying about the car?
Yeah, it is a bit chunky. We didn't give it the credit of looking the older Ferrari. We called it a skip because it looked like the sides of a skip, basically. But it was still quick, you know. And that's sometimes about the spacer between the engine and the gearbox, you know, when car has speed and the team and, you know, lots of stuff other than the design of the car. But yeah, this looks clunky to me. I think if you saw this car sitting beside, and I'm using the AlphaTauri here as an example, because it's a small team, limited to extent, limited resource, but probably actually fairly well financially funded. But if you put those two cars side by side now, you would probably say they're from a different era. And that's a bit disappointing, really, I suppose you might call it, because things have moved on. And I'm not being critical of Ferrari, and this will probably be an absolute rocket ship, but I can't see why if it is. I would not have a clue why this would be a rocket ship. And again, it might just be the spacer between the engine and the gearbox. They may have got it right this year. But it's something that just looks that, as you say, clunky. Just looks, every area of it is big. You know, it's something that you just, it's not the philosophy of a racing car that I try to understand. Maybe they've got some super duper special packaging in there for the radiators themselves and stuff, and they need that side pod profile to achieve it. And that may be their killer, you know, the thing that makes it work. But the Coke bottle area, it's very quick, you know, it turns in very quickly. And you can't do that all the time because, you know, as I say, getting the airflow to stay attached on the inner surface of the Coke bottle is quite difficult, especially when the car's mid-corner, when the car's sliding a little bit, the inside of the car, it can stall that inside of the Coke bottle. And if you stall the inside of the Coke bottle, you just destroy everything. So you have to give it some leniency for that sort of thing happening. Let's just wait and see what appears in testing and how testing goes, because on face value, as I say, I'm not sure I see anything in this car that will bring them up to race with Red Bull and, well, with what we expect Red Bull and Mercedes to be able to do. Maybe whenever we see their real cars, you know, I think Mercedes is coming out tomorrow. Whenever we see it, maybe we'll say, Jesus, you know, Ferrari have done a fantastic job. But I'm not holding my breath for that one.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the acid test, isn't it? The stopwatch never lies. Well, sometimes it does in testing, but not once qualifying and races get underway. You mentioned the spacer between the gearbox and the chassis. We know it's not a split turbo, but they have done some quite clever stuff with their combustion technology. They had the hybrid improvement last year, so we're expecting a good step from the engine. But just Ferrari as a whole, while you can look at the car and there are some question marks over it and everything you said makes sense, Ferrari does seem to be a team that is on a sensible trajectory. And I must admit, that gives me a little bit more confidence that when you get something that looks a bit unusual, you tend to think, well, it's either a stroke of genius or they've got it wrong. But I kind of feel like the prior probability with the way Ferrari's gone over the last 12 months with the improvements it's made, they've made good changes there, I tend to give them the benefit of the doubt and think it's more likely perhaps they might have done something quite clever. So how do you feel about Ferrari as a whole?
Well, I think if I go back to when we saw the last sort of main regulation change, I think it was 2017, whenever the aerodynamic regulations changed reasonably dramatically. I thought Ferrari did a great job there. They were one of the first teams to realise that the shorter side pod, getting the solutions for the side crash structures, and how the barge boards and and getting the wheels away from the rear of the front tires was, you know, the important issue. I think initially when that car came out, one of the things I said was that they didn't do the best job on the diffuser as far as connecting up to low pressure behind the rear tires, but that was changed very quickly. So I think that time they read the rules very, very well and came up with a very good concept. And then obviously went through the doldrums a little bit from there with the engine problems they had in 2019 and then the penalty they sort of suffered in 2020, and 2021 was about coming back from there. So I think last year's car we have to take a little bit with a pinch of salt, not knowing if it was the power unit that they were getting back on stream with, or the car. I don't think either of them were bad, but I don't think either of them were top of the list. And because of obviously they realised that they had to do something with the combustion chamber and the engines, they were working in that area. And then with this, the new fuel, but it's 10% renewable ethanol, I believe, for 2022. And with that coming in and working on the combustion chamber at the same time to recover from whatever they were doing in 2019 that contravened the regulations to a certain extent, they were obviously working in the right area and they had the right understanding. So I wouldn't be surprised if they've made a decent step in that area because they had to anyway. So it'll be a matter of time to see, but I'm pretty sure that I would say the power unit is going to be up there this year. As far as the car is concerned, I just have to hold my breath and wait and see. I really want Ferrari to be fighting at the front because I don't support Ferrari or anything like that, but Ferrari are Formula One. And it's lovely to see them in that competition at the front and battling with it. And we've missed that over the last few years, to be honest.
Yeah, well, they're the team most likely to be able to join Mercedes and Red Bull at the front. So, yeah, it's good for everyone if Ferrari's up there. Obviously, the engine thing they're recovering from. We should say that the FIA believe they were operating the engine illegally, but they couldn't prove it. That's the technical thing. But the fact that Ferrari gave away lots of secrets and helped shape those technical directives, I think, makes it pretty clear what was going on there.
Well, it's all about wording, how you read it, and where you can bring the grey areas in. So I don't think Ferrari did anything or doing anything blatantly illegal. I think they were working perhaps outside of what the intention of the regulations was. But I also think that whenever we see all these F1 cars lined up, there'll be a few people thinking, oop, that wasn't what we intended whenever we wrote these regulations. So I think there'll be, you know, it's not all done and dusted just yet. There might be a few interpretations that need questions answered or asked. And I think the teams will be the best people at being the referee on that, you know, more than the FIA or more than the F1, because the teams have spent now, you know, a year with probably a couple of hundred engineers at each team digging deep into these regulations to find the loopholes. So, you know, some people will have done things 100% correctly, some people won't. So I'm expecting to see some fireworks whenever the teams start complaining about each other a little bit. Not that they would, you know, they're all gentlemen in Formula One, so they don't do that sort of thing. But I'm sure there'll be a few emails slipping back and forward to the FIA or to Ross Brawn at F1 to say, hang on, is this okay, Ross? You know, is this what you meant to happen here? Because we didn't read it like that, you know?
Yeah, so there's already plenty of correspondence starting, even from the bits and pieces they've seen so far, and the really trick stuff won't have appeared yet. So thanks very much, Gary Anderson, for your insight. It's going to be great to see how Ferrari gets on this year. Head to therace.com and don't forget the hyphen. You can read Gary's in-depth analysis of the car there, as well as all the rest of our coverage of the Ferrari launch and the Mercedes launch that's on Friday. Do also check out our other podcasts, including Bring Back V10s, and also have a look at our YouTube channel if video is your thing. The launches are continuing to come thick and fast. We'll be back next time with everything you need to know about the new Mercedes. Thanks for listening to the Aramco 2022 F1 Car Reveal Series.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.